Sea Grant and Lake Michigan, Waters in Transition. A production of the University of Wisconsin, Sea Grant Institute. Episode 7, Mussels and Food Webs. The previous podcast closed with me making my way into the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's School of Freshwater Sciences. I had come to speak to some of the experts that Sea Grant helps support, researchers who specialize in the issues directly affecting Lake Michigan. First up on the hit list were Harvey Bootsma, an associate professor on staff here, and one of his graduate students, Caroline Bosley. I've driven a long way in this series, and I was hungry for answers. So, after we exchanged greetings and made ourselves comfortable, I cut right to the chase. Tell me about food webs in Lake Michigan.
Lake Michigan, compared to many other lakes of the world, has a relatively simple food web in that we just don't have a lot of species of fish in Lake Michigan, but we have enough to make it complicated. The types of species we have changed over the years for several reasons. Some species have come in uninvited. They've snuck in through various pathways. Other species have been introduced intentionally, but they weren't naturally in the system to begin with. So the species composition of the fish community has really changed over the past century in Lake Michigan. That's especially true in the last 10 to 20 years, as we've had a few species come into the lake that have really changed the way the lake works. We're interested in food webs because food webs are how energy moves in a lake. It's how energy moves from one organism to another. Organisms eat each other, and we need to understand who eats whom to understand the relationship between species and ultimately what the carrying capacity of a lake is, how much fish can you have in a lake. So we've been studying how the food web structure in Lake Michigan has been changing, especially over the last 10 years or so, as the result of some of these invasive species that are coming into the lake.
What's the name of the project you're working on? Does it have a specific name?
The project is Nearshore Food Web Structure in Lake Michigan.
How do you interpret the nearshore food structure? Tell me something about Lake Michigan.
Okay. What is really interesting about Lake Michigan is people know that they're invasive mussels and they're having a detrimental effect on the lake. But it's really interesting to see them progress outwards into the lake. They're not just staying in the nearshore. They're actually moving further and further outshore and adapting to the deeper water and less nutrients and less light. And they're really drawing down a lot of the plankton to this benthic bottom zone where all the sediment is. That really is changing this flow of energy, and it's harmful to all the fish that are trying to live in Lake Michigan just because there's not enough plankton or food for them to eat. What I'm looking at is these offshore mussels that are having a similar effect to what they're having in the nearshore, where they're changing the way the ecosystem works and altering the energy flow in the offshore zone of Lake Michigan.
How are you doing that?
I'm specifically looking at the sediment. So I take cores and I date the cores, and then I look at the different nutrients in the cores and the different layers to see if there's any trends or changes. Because by looking at the nutrients, you're looking at the way the food structure has changed and the way the energy might have shifted from fish being the dominant species to the mussels being the dominant species in the bottom. The mussels are draining all of the plankton and they're taking all the nutrients down to the bottom. And so we're expecting to maybe see different concentrations of nutrients now compared to maybe 50 years ago when there weren't any mussels in the lake.
How long are the average cores? How long of a time period are you looking at?
I'm interested in only the past 20 to 30 years, since maybe the 1980s when the Dreissena mussels first invaded the Great Lakes. But you can go back even farther to the early 1800s and look at how deforestation affected the lake and how the nutrients changed in the lake. But the last 20 to 30 years are the most fascinating because of the invasive mussels coming into the lake and really proliferating to large populations.
The Dreissena mussels, are those the zebra mussels, the quagga mussels? Are they related?
Yeah, those two species are both called Dreissena, which is their genus name, but they have different species names. So they're essentially cousins, the zebra mussel and the quagga mussel. Zebra mussel is called zebra mussel because it's striped like a zebra. Quagga mussel is also striped, but the word zebra was already taken for its cousin, so they call it the quagga mussel, which is actually an extinct relative of the zebra in Africa. In the last 5 to 7 years, the quagga mussel has really displaced the zebra mussel. We first had the zebra mussel. They dominated in the nearshore zone on rocky substrate. They need a hard bottom to grow on. But once the quaggas got into the lake, they really took off. They've displaced the zebra mussel from the nearshore zone. Quaggas also are able to live on soft bottom and in colder water, so they're not confined to the nearshore zone. They've expanded across the lake, and they cover virtually the whole bottom of Lake Michigan right now.
Well, that explained the stretches of beach I had discovered at Harrington Beach State Park that were so covered with mussel shells you couldn't even see the sand. Here on Harrington Beach, you can see piles of shells that have washed up, literally covering the ground. I wonder if these are quagga mussels. Might say something, the alewives scattered in with all these shells. Say something about the transitions that have come to Lake Michigan. So what I had seen at the beach did indeed reflect what was going on deep inside the lake. I had some more questions about quagga mussels for Harvey. Why did they displace the zebra mussels? Are they just tougher and meaner? Or?
There's a few differences between the two species. They're not really meaner. In fact, if anything, they're more passive. They have a slightly lower metabolic rate, but they're more efficient at converting what they eat into quagga mussel growth. So that gives them some advantage. Also, because they're better adapted to cold conditions, they're feeding throughout the winter and into the spring. So when the zebra mussels get up and running in the spring and start trying to feed, they find that there's not much food in the water because the quagga mussels have already eaten most of it.
What would be the best outcomes for this study that Sea Grant's helping you with?
What we hope to do is reconstruct the current food web in Lake Michigan, understand who's feeding on whom, which we don't know very well right now because the lake is changing so quickly that it's changing faster than we can study it and understand it. So we'd like to figure out who's feeding on whom, and once we know that, we can start to figure out which fish may benefit from current conditions in the lake and which fish may be hurt by current conditions in the lake. And that can help inform management decisions such as stocking decisions, how much fish should we stock into the lake, and which species of fish should we stock into the lake. So we've been running this project for the last few years. We're getting to the point now where we've collected a lot of data and we're analyzing the data and starting to see some pictures or stories come out of this data. One thing we're finding is that, especially in the nearshore, food web structure is different from one place to another. For example, especially when we move from the west side of Lake Michigan to the east side, we find that feeding relationships change among the fish. And we think that this is ultimately related to the fact that on the west side of the lake, there's more rocky bottom, which changes the types of fish and invertebrates that can live there. Whereas on the east side of the lake, there's more soft bottom, which is amenable to other species of fish and invertebrates. Another interesting thing we found is that by comparing our results now with a study that we did 10 to 12 years ago, we've discovered that the food web has changed a lot in the last 10 years. In particular, it looks like a lot of fish, even fish that live in the open waters of the lake, are starting to rely more on the nearshore zone as a source of energy, which wasn't the case 10 years ago. 10 years ago, they relied primarily on a food web that was based on plankton that grow out in the open waters. Now it seems that a lot of the energy that's produced in the nearshore zone by things like algae growing on the bottom of the lake in shallow waters, some of that energy is getting out to the open waters of the lake and supporting the food web out there.
Where's this all going to end up?
Lake Michigan is a lake in transition right now, so we're still watching it change and trying to figure out the answer to that exact question is, where are we going? Right now, it looks like fish that are able to capitalize on this nearshore energy may be in a better position than fish that are still relying heavily on pelagic resources. So, for example, there are some salmonids like brown trout that live more in the nearshore zone, and they seem to be benefiting more from this changing food web regime than some of the other species like Chinook salmon and coho salmon.
It's really fascinating how these little tiny mussels lying on the bottom of the lake can affect the whole lake. Quagga mussels in particular can filter 1 to 4 liters per day. And if there's 5,000 to 12,000 on a lake bottom, they can filter this huge amount of water, and all the plankton they're filtering, that could feed Milwaukee for up to 12 years. So it gives you an idea of how much energy these quagga mussels are consuming at the bottom of the lake and drawing away from other animals trying to live in the lake.
Are they going to change the name to Lake Quagga Mussel soon?
We hope not. And in fact, some areas we're already starting to see a slight decline in the number of mussels. Often invasive species will have a population explosion when they first enter a new ecosystem. And it may be that over a long enough period of time, we see some of these populations essentially eat themselves out of house and home and start to decline to more moderate levels.
Or something decides that they're tasty and learns how to eat them.
Yes. That's right.
Well, that's all we have time for. Join me for the next podcast, where we'll learn some of the latest techniques they're using to study Lake Michigan. We'll also speak with someone who's been to the very darkest depths of the lake. You won't want to miss it. So, this is Chris Bocast. Till next time. This recording was produced by Chris Bocast for the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. Thanks for listening.